Good evening and welcome to WHQR's live broadcast of our 2013 Wilmington City Council Candidate Forum. Four candidates running for three open seats are joining us tonight. Current Mayor Bill Saffo is also seeking re-election and is running unopposed. He is not with us tonight. Also, we regret to inform you that Charlie Rivenbark, an incumbent seeking re-election to council, had a medical emergency earlier today and is unable to join us tonight. He sends his regrets. We, of course, return our best wishes for his speedy recovery. We're also joined by a small live audience, two journalists who will be asking questions of our candidates during the first portion of the forum, and you, our viewers and listeners. We're broadcasting live tonight on both WWAY-TV3 and WHQR 91.3 FM. During the second segment of the forum, we will invite members of the audience to ask questions. That portion will carry with it some explicit rules. If you're considering a question, here are some guidelines. The question must be in the form of a question. No statements allowed. You will have a 30-second time limit to ask your question, and the question must be directed to all the candidates. One brief note about this election after questions from listeners emerged. North Carolina law permits municipalities to use either partisan or nonpartisan elections. Wilmington has chosen a nonpartisan election format. And while candidates' party affiliation is not listed on the ballot, it does not mean that political parties are not providing support to the candidates. It also means that write-in candidates do not have to qualify in the same way they would for partisan elections and could ostensibly win the election. Marvin McFadden of New Hanover County's Board of Elections explains that candidates running unopposed do not win by default. They must still win the election, including against any write-in candidates. One other clarifying note from Marvin McFadden. Residents must live within the limits of a particular municipality, for example, within Wilmington city limits or Carolina, Curie, or Wrightsville Beach town limits to vote in this election. Now let's meet our candidates in alphabetical order. First, we meet Derek Bickle. Derek Bickle attended Appalachian State University. He has worked in information technology for over 15 years and is currently the Director of Operations for Infranet Technologies Group. Mr. Bickle and his wife have lived in Wilmington for the past 9 years. As a father of young children, he says he believes he is in a position to address the concerns of families in Wilmington. Hello, Mr. Bickle.
Hello.
Felix Cooper, who was not able to be with us tonight, is an Army veteran with over 30 years of budget and management experience. He served New Hanover County for 16 years as finance manager and county manager. During his time with the county, he participated in the development of the airport and the renovation of the old courthouse. Mr. Cooper is currently a member of the Post 10 American Legion and a former member of Residents of Old Wilmington. Kevin O'Grady retired to Wilmington after 21 years as a commercial litigator in Florida. He earned advanced degrees from Cornell and George Washington Universities. Mr. O'Grady has held leadership positions in a number of local organizations, including Wilmington Downtown, Inc., and the Historic Wilmington Foundation. He's currently serving his first term on Wilmington City Council, and he is on the Wave Transit Board, Ports and Waterways Commission, and the Council Evaluations Committee. Welcome, Mr. O'Grady.
Thank you, Rachel.
Charlie Rivenbark, who again was unable to join us tonight due to a medical emergency, is a native Wilmingtonian and a Vietnam veteran. He works as a commercial and industrial real estate broker. It was 1993 when he began his first term of service on Wilmington City Council. That continued until 2001. He was re-elected to council in 2009. He represents the city on the board of the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, and he serves on Wilmington Downtown, Inc., naming facilities, and audit committees. Earl Sheridan is a native Wilmingtonian who earned his undergraduate degree in political science from Appalachian State University and his advanced degrees in the same field from the University of Tennessee. Since 1980, he's taught political science at UNCW. He served on the board of directors for the Domestic Violence Shelter, as president of the New Hanover County NAACP, and on the board of directors for Thalian Hall. Since 2005, he's been a member of Wilmington City Council and has served as mayor pro tem since 2009. Welcome, Dr. Sheridan.
Thank you.
Skip Watkins has lived in Wilmington for over 30 years. He earned his Bachelor of Science and Master of Business Administration from UNCW. Mr. Watkins has worked in the financial services industry for nearly 24 years and is currently an independent financial advisor with Capital Investment Group. Mr. Watkins has served on the board of directors of the Cape Fear Fair and Expo and has spoken at UNCW's Cameron School of Business Week for the past 5 years. Hello, Mr. Watkins.
Thank you.
Now let's meet the journalists who will be asking the questions. First, Kevin Wizzardo is news content manager and political editor at WWAY-TV3. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Rachel.
Sitting next to Kevin is WHQR reporter Katie O'Reilly. She works with WHQR as a UNCW graduate fellow in the newsroom. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Rachel.
I'd also like to introduce our timekeeper, Lindsay McGrath. And now for the rules. The format goes like this. Kevin Wizzardo and Katie O'Reilly will begin with their prepared questions. Candidates have 2 minutes to answer each question. We will rotate the order in which candidates answer questions so a different person has the opportunity to answer first each time. There will be no opening statements in order to allow more time for questions. All candidates will have the opportunity to deliver a 90-second closing statement. Lindsay, the timekeeper, will signal when 30 seconds remain, then again at the 15-second mark, and Lindsay is now showing those signals. She will ring the bell when time is up. Would you ring the bell, Lindsay? There you go. And we'll take a quick break around 8 o'clock. WWAY's broadcast goes until 8, so we will sign off there. We will continue with part 2 on WHQR 91.3. At that point, we'll shift gears to take questions submitted in advance via email. We'll also take questions from our live studio audience. Let's begin. Kevin Wizzardo, would you direct your first question to Derek Bickle?
Thank you, Rachel. Well, gentlemen, let's start with the big issue in the city, it seems, right now, and that being crime, particularly gang crime. We know City Council recently approved funding for a new gang investigative unit with Wilmington Police. But give me one concrete idea you have for how to combat this growing problem in the Port City.
First of all, thank you for having me tonight, and I'm sure our thoughts and prayers are with Charlie as well. Crime, obviously, is the number one issue facing our city right now. The City Council gave, you know, the investigative task force, gave the police chief what he needed. I think we need to do a little bit more. I think we need to pay our police officers more so we don't become a training ground for those policemen, so they stay here and the relationships that they've formed inside the community are continue, and the trust for the police force continues to grow. I also think that we need to give funding to social programs such as the DREAMS program. You know, the city gives the DREAMS program a place for a dollar rent, but they only give them $16,000 a year. I think we can do more. We need to get the children that are at risk as young as possible. You know, it's sad to say when they're 12, 13 years old, they're already lost to gangs. We need to get in there as early as possible, 6, 7, and give these at-risk youth a place where they can do something constructive and get off the streets so gangs don't get to them. I think that we need to give them more funding. I think we also need to get these programs inside the communities, because not everyone has transportation to get to a program like A Dreams. So we need to foster and create these programs inside communities such as Creekwood, such as Houston Moore, so we get to the root of the problem where children live and make it accessible for everyone.
Thank you. Same question, Mr. O'Grady.
Thank you. Well, as Derek says, there's two parts to this problem. The first part is the enforcement part. And we have great faith in our police chief, and he's got a great relationship with the sheriff. And together, the two of them can hold the top down on this pot. But if we don't turn the fire off under the pot, it's going to keep boiling over. And that's the second part. That's the prevention part. And Derek's right. We do need to do some more with our social service agencies. That's the one part of our funding that we take the most criticism about. But as we see now, it's probably the most important. because it is the programs that will divert the inner city youth from gangs, that will show them that they have hope, that'll show them that they can have a safe and fulfilling life without picking up a gun. Those are the programs that are important. Now, we've funded them over the years, but we need to do more. Last year, for example, we served over 4,000 youth in this city. You can read the annual performance report, and it's in there, and it's dealt with illiteracy, sexual abuse, homelessness, and many other aspects that create the hopelessness in the inner city that leads young men and young women to turn to the gangs. We have to do more. And I, for one, will certainly, when we hit the next budget cycle, provided you all let me be at that budget cycle, I will certainly be pursuing an additional amount of funds and also a direction to the staff to try to bring us the programs that do address those underlying causes of gang violence. I see my time's up.
Thank you. Dr. Sheridan, same question.
Yes. As Kevin mentioned in his question, we have, of course, already voted some additional resources for our police. One of the things that I think that we might want to look into is at least exploring the idea of reinstituting the NABS program. That was a program that we used to have here in Wilmington, neighborhood area base stations, I think it used to be. And these were mobile little police stations that were in different parts of the city. And I wasn't on council when those were done away with, so I can't remember the reasoning for that, but we may want to look at least reinstituting those or looking at those once again. But I, of course, agree with what has been said as far as the idea of social service groups and the idea of nonprofit groups. I think this is important. Whenever we've been criticized for giving money to these as being social service groups, and some people say it's not the role of city council to do that, I have always said that that doing that is public safety, and I agree with the idea that it is a public safety. Of course, we need to pay our police better. We realize that, you know, we went through the economic downturn and we're not able to raise our employees' salaries the way that we would have liked, but for the past, we raised them this past year, and I think have a plan to raise them the next year, and we will make sure that they have the kind of wage that they need to serve our city. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Watkins, same question.
Thank you, Rachel. From day one of my candidacy, I've spoken about the crime issue in Wilmington. And from day one, it's been about the enforcement and the prevention. There actually is a third prong called intervention, but that's going to be the toughest. But also, as being a good steward of the city of Wilmington's resources, I hope to go to some of the businesses in the community, the big corporations, and say, this is your hometown. You know, we need help with some grants. You know, the taxpayers, yes, they're going to probably have to carry a bigger burden, and we're going to have to find a way to do that without raising taxes. It's true that our police and fire are underpaid compared to their peers, and we have become a training ground. We do have to retain quality public safety officers. I also think a big issue is that there's a level of boredom. I've spoken to several moms of single mothers in various socioeconomics, and it basically comes down to sort of what someone said earlier, that it's hard to get to a program. It's expensive to do a program. There's no hope. There's a high level of unemployment in many of these areas. So I would hope to work with the boards of education and try to find it's called a career and technical track, and research has proven that it does help retain lower dropout rate. So I think we've all up here pretty much believed the same thing, but from day one, that's been my song, and I'm still singing it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Watkins. Mr. Felix Cooper has joined us a few minutes late, so I'd like to give you, Mr. Cooper, the opportunity to answer the first question. So this is actually very good timing. Kevin Wizzardo from WWAY, would you please repeat the question for Mr. Cooper?
Yes, Mr. Cooper, my question was, with crime being the big issue right now being discussed in the city, give me a concrete idea you have for fighting the crime problem, especially the gang problem, beyond the money that's been given for the investigative unit.
Well, I think you've got to overwhelm the problem with people and resources and possibility of combining the city and the county into one unit so that it could be organized and directed by the police chief to where it's needed. And that's just my one. I haven't got my breath yet.
That's okay. It was quite a climb up here. We're on the third floor. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to a special live broadcast of WWAY's and WHQR's live Wilmington City Council candidate forum. We're joined by five of the six candidates running for three open seats on council and a live studio audience. We're also joined by WWAY's Kevin Wizzardo and WHQR's Katie O'Reilly. Let's move to question number two. Katie, would you direct your first question to Felix Cooper?
I understand that sequestration at the federal level and state cutbacks mean that greater financial burdens will be falling on local governing bodies. In your opinion, what is one expenditure that the city can't afford to cut no matter what?
I think they can't afford to cut public safety, that's for sure, because without public safety, the city just doesn't exist. And there are other things, but public safety, fire and police, are two of the most important things the city does.
Thank you, sir. Kevin O'Grady, same question.
Well, Katie, I think you're probably going to get the same answer on this, because public safety clearly is something we can't cut. The problem is that if we do start seeing cuts in grants in the federal government particularly, it's really going to hurt our public safety program, because our police do rely on a great number of grants. For example, most of our bulletproof vests come through grant programs. And we certainly want all of our officers to have up-to-date bulletproof vests when they're out there defending us. So we're very dependent on grants, both from the federal and the state government. And I personally believe that what's coming down the hill to us at local government is probably the biggest future problem city governments are going to have, because we have depended on that money coming to us, and we put it to use. We're the government that works. We're the ones that are out on the street. And now we're not going to have those resources anymore. And we're going to have a lot of trouble trying to make up for them if the federal and state government continues in their current loggerheads of just not getting anything done. And we unfortunately can't wait. We have to get things done because we're the government that works.
Thank you. Earl Sheridan, same question.
As Kevin said, you might get the same answer. I'm going to say public safety as well. Public safety is the biggest chunk of our budget, and it's that way for a reason. And it is probably that one thing that we cannot cut, because that's one of the key responsibilities of a city is public safety.
Thank you. Skip Watkins.
I'd like to say it a little differently, but when I teach my as a financial advisor, when I speak to my clients, I talk about got-tos and want-tos. You know, it's the different goals you have. And we have to take care of the got-tos before we do the want-tos. And I do agree public safety because, you know, we're in a situation right now that our house is on fire. And so we got to put the fire out before we rebuild the house. And so public safety must be in the forefront and probably even grow. Thank you.
Thank you. Derek Bickle?
Obviously, public safety. That's one area that we can't cut. You know, not to to sound redundant, but, you know, I think we need to figure out ways we can be more responsible on other areas of the budget to cut spending, so when these cuts do come down from the state and federal levels, we're ready, we're prepared for it. You know, I think a lot of times when we have certain ideas as a city and there's money spent to look at those ideas, to explore those ideas, and I'm talking tens of thousands of dollars, I think that's one area we can really look at to say, do we really need an outside third-party agency to come in and spend that money? We need to take that money and make sure that we all are safe and put it towards public safety, because obviously that is the biggest piece of the budget.
Thank you. Kevin Wizzardo, would you direct your next question to Kevin O'Grady?
Well, let's build on that. Let's talk a little bit about maybe what you would cut. With annexation kind of out of the question now, based on the law that was passed last year, forced annexation at least, not allowing you to grow your tax base that way, how would you maintain services, or what services would you cut to continue the way the city's going right now?
Well, my hope is that we'll be able to continue with growth. Even though our land area may not increase, we have great potential to grow this city. We have a northern downtown that has been wiped clean. It's a blank slate for us to draw on. And we've already set the zoning there for high-rise building. And I keep using this example, the PPD building, one building, pays the equivalent taxes as 150 single-family homes. Now think of the land area that you need for 150 single-family homes, and they also need roads, and they need stop signs, and they need additional police, and they need additional sanitation. They need a lot of services for that tax money. But a high-rise downtown will generate tax revenue with minimal additional cost to us. So we do have room to grow. We also have, we've been rezoning quite a bit lately. I don't know if you noticed, in the last 2 months, I think we've had four or five rezonings where the developers are coming to us recognizing that the single-family home is falling out of favor in our with our current demographics. We have more people living as singles. The young are staying single longer, and the older people are becoming single and living longer. So the whole demographics is changing, and so is the housing stock. So we have developers coming to us looking to build multifamily homes and to rezone what used to be zoned as single-family homes. So we're seeing that there will be additional density. The challenge that brings to us is how can we entertain this density and still not lose the good things we've got, the great neighborhoods we have, the relatively low traffic. And I don't have any additional time, so thank you.
Thank you. Before Earl Sheridan begins the answer, if any candidate at any point would like a question repeated, that will not count towards your time, and we're happy to do that. Dr. Sheridan.
Well, of course, we had to make cuts during the economic downturn when we had a hit to our budget because of the lowering property tax revenues and various other sales tax revenues and various other types of things that occur. So we had to make cuts then. I too would like to look at it in a different way. I'd like to see what other kind of ways that we can still grow despite the idea that annexation is no longer on the table. There is the possibility sometimes of voluntary annexation, such as the River Lights project that is going on here. And I do believe also that increased density is a way of trying to bring about growth in our city.
Thank you. Skip Watkins.
Kevin, thank you for a very tough question. I'm going to hit it directly. In the long run, the gentlemen are correct. We're hoping to find higher density, increased in property tax values as they go down the road, increase in sales tax, hopefully some of the interest income on some of the city money. You know, there are revenue sources we hope to see increase, but in the short run, that's not going to happen. We have to be realistic. I'm not afraid to make tough choices. I'm not afraid to answer tough questions. There's a base amount of funding needed for every department. But also there are oftentimes enhancements or additional things, whether someone wants additional software or additional hardware. So it's going to be hard probably to cut some of the base funding required to keep the city running efficiently because everybody wants their potholes fixed and everybody wants trash picked up. I do not want you knocking on my door because you have a pothole. But the additional monies that are requested, you know, we're going to have to look at those very scrutinized. And I'm going to go back to the got-tos and want-tos. And when it comes down to the want-tos, they're going to be put on the table, whether it's and I agree that the social programs do represent an element of public safety. But every line of the budget is going to be scrutinized, and favoritism's got to be taken out, and reality's got to be faced. And I'm not afraid to make those choices. Thank you.
Derek Bickle.
You know, I think I alluded to it in my last answer. You know, I think we need to look at everything extremely close to see where we can save money. Obviously, that was the question of what would we cut. I think some of these things that come across city council's table and some of these ideas and some of these third parties that we're paying, do we have to have this? Is this going to be something for the future of Wilmington, which is what I'm all about? Obviously, with the forced annexation, a thing of the past, we have to learn to grow up responsibly since we can no longer grow out. Bringing those high-density, medium-density projects into the city is going to decrease traffic. It's going to increase our tax revenue. I don't want my taxes to increase, and the only way we can do that is by growing up and getting those high and medium-density projects into the city. Now, how do we do that? We need to do that in a responsible way. We can't just rubber stamp everything that comes across. We need to look at what it's going to be, not only for the immediate impact of the economic environment of the city, but also for the long term as well.
Thank you. Kevin, would you repeat the question before we go to Mr. Cooper?
Yes, just with forced annexation off the table, how do you plan to grow the tax base in the city and maintain services, or what would you cut to maintain services?
Well, you certainly could cut the unneeded services that you have now, if there are any. And I think, like everybody said, you've got to look at every dollar, and if it's needed and it's required for the city, fine. If it's not required, let the department heads come up with some alternate solution to what they're asking for.
Thank you very much. You're tuned to a special live broadcast of the Wilmington City Council Candidates Forum. We're joined by five of the six candidates tonight, a live studio audience, and two journalists, Kevin Wizzardo from WWAY and Katie O'Reilly from WHQR. I'm moderator Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Katie O'Reilly, would you direct your next question to Earl Sheridan?
Yes, so speaking of those needed dollars, in what area is the city most in need of infrastructure improvements?
Do you mean geographic area or just area?
Just general area.
Okay. There are lots of places that we need infrastructure improvements, and we've been moving to do that. One of the things that we did do, we did a survey and asked people, what would they pay a little bit more in taxes for? And the answer came back resoundingly to have their streets paved and improved, to have more sidewalks, things of this nature. And, of course, we did this, and we are doing this, and we have a plan to continue to improve our streets and sidewalks. I think there are many areas, particularly some areas in some of our inner city areas where the streets have really fallen into disrepair and sidewalks are not there that we can deal with. Of course, we do have 5-year capital improvement plans, these plans look at the various places in our city that need to have street and sidewalk improvements. But I think there are various areas that can utilize some infrastructure changes.
Skip Watkins, same question.
Please suffer a shout out. I suspect that Charlie Rivenbark is watching us live tonight, so you're in our thoughts and prayers, Charlie. I see three things. I agree with traffic. On the way here tonight, literally in front of me at an intersection, and my wife is T-boned. You and I talked about it, Rachel. She was T-boned 2 years ago. I was literally almost involved in a rear-end collision here in Wilmington. We know that Wilmington is one of the highest automobile accidents in the state, if not the highest. But that's not council's fault. That's a function of our growth and the fact that we're basically 180 degree circumference. We don't have the coast to help relieve some of our traffic. So we've got to find some ways, much like what Randall Drive has been done, to expand Randall Drive, hopefully find some ways to alleviate traffic. Also, mixed-use zoning down the road typically does help reduce some of the traffic. Higher density populations around the university will help alleviate some of the traffic in the future. But in the short run right now, two things I really see, as Dr. Sheridan alluded to, is the streets. We could probably work nonstop. Everybody in this audience could get out there with some shovels and some asphalt, and we'd work all year, you know. But another thing I've noticed is lighting in some of our, especially like downtown and some of our other areas, public safety, lighting is a very basic thing. Yes, it's expensive, but once it's there, how do you put a measure on the value of safety? So lighting in some of our downtown areas and some of our neighborhoods. So I think in the long run, yes, we got to alleviate the overall traffic, but in the short run, fix the basic fundamental road needs, but we need some lights, because I think that will be, that will reduce, what's the old saying, if you cut the lights on, the cockroaches run?
Thank you. Derek Bickle?
Yeah, I think obviously the infrastructure, it's not going to be too much different than what anybody else has said. The five-year plan is a great plan. You know, when this is over, we need another five-year plan, a 10-year plan. We need to continue to fund because we're continuing to just grow. We're just going to, our roads are always going to be failing. We need to look at ways that we can improve our roads, our traffic, our lighting, our safety. Obviously, there's our own thing. You know, along the lines of public safety, we need to do something for the Lovegrove community. You know, that is a public safety issue number one. There's only one way into that. The CSX derailment that was happening in that community not too long ago, you know, had to bring it to the forefront. I think there was a lot of people that finally said, oh, where is this? You know, where is this place? Why do they only have one road in? I think we need to look at, that's an infrastructure plan. I think that should be top priority, number one, of this council, you know, at this future council. You know, they always say, well, there was something that was, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they should have done this, or it was approved to be done. It's going to take a lot of money, but that's the money set aside for. Obviously, it's for infrastructure and road improvements. So I think, obviously, roads, number one, public safety, number two, and obviously getting those folks in the Lovegrove community another access.
Thank you. Katie, would you repeat the question?
Yes. Mr. Cooper, in what area is the city most in need of infrastructure improvement?
Would you repeat that, please?
Yes. Where would you like to see the most infrastructure improvement?
I think the major thoroughfares that we have, Oleander, College Road, and those high-volume roads are probably the worst need right now of infrastructure improvement. And we also, and I have said this before in some of these forums, we've got to deal with all this traffic coming in from Brunswick County and from Pender County. And that traffic costs the city a lot of money in fire protection and police protection. And I think there ought to be, and I think I've been working on a plan that the city could gain funds from those people coming in from those other counties.
Thank you, sir. Kevin O'Grady.
Thank you. After public safety, maintaining the infrastructure of this city is our greatest responsibility. I disagree with Skip when he said it's not really the council's fault. It is. For years, many councils neglected the infrastructure of the city. Remember the sewer system. It was so bad we got fined, and ultimately we had to turn it over to an authority because the city and county just couldn't get it done. I'm proud of the fact that in this past 2 years, and I helped lead this, we created the five-year infrastructure plan because we couldn't cut it anymore. Everything we're doing has to be done. Our roads need to be repaired. In the last 10 years, we only paved about 10 miles of road. This year, we've paved 13. You know, year's only half over. We're finally starting to catch up. It is absolutely the responsibility of council to keep its eye on maintenance, keeping our infrastructure good. It's important for the quality of life for all of you. But the second thing, it helps us finance things. When we go to the bond ratings, they look at what are we putting aside to maintain what we have, because they know that is a cost that hangs out there. We're catching up on that. We're going to have to catch it. Derek's right. He's heard us say this before. Once this five-year plan is over, there'll have to be another one because we won't be caught up after 5 years. But we are catching up, and it is important for us to maintain our quality of life, to maintain our financial rating, and to make this the kind of city we all want it to be.
Thank you. Kevin, would you deliver your next question to Skip Watkins?
I have a question about history and perspective. Last year, the mayor and city council pushed for a bond referendum on a ballpark, $37 million with the debt service added on to that. In the end, it failed 70% to 30%. What did that say about how in tune city council was to the people they represent and being stewards for their constituents?
There were two aspects to that. decision. There was qualitative for quality of life to attract businesses and industry to come to Wilmington. I think we all can acknowledge that. But the quantitative side of it, Kevin, the numbers just weren't there. Quite frankly, Mandalay didn't have skin in the game. They were looking to build a $38 million, give or take, stadium down by the river. And we all know that usually with big projects like that, they never come in at a budget. Typically, it's over. The numbers of attendees was estimated to be 5,000 per game, 70-some games a year, 350,000 people, 350,000 people a year downtown. I researched that particular league during that period of time, and I don't want to quote the exact number, but none of the teams came anywhere near 5,000, and I alluded earlier to our 180-degree influence because the Dolphins and the Crabs don't care much about baseball. I also look at the existing – so basically I don't think council had a – they had a qualitative aspect to it, but I don't think they put a quantitative measure to it. We also have several professional sports teams in the area. So we have the Wilmington Hammerheads. We have the Sharks. We have a basketball team called the Sea Dogs. If Wilmington wanted baseball, UNCW baseball stadium would be packed. The Sharks game at Legion Stadium would be packed. It was not. And so the tax dollars of these business owners – would have been used to finance their own competition. So basically, we would have had the public entity, the city of Wilmington, competing against three sports teams that, quite frankly, do their best to stay afloat, and they're all great teams. But I just don't think council had the focus that I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Derek Bickle, same question.
You know, I'll keep it real brief. I understand what the city council was trying to do. They're trying to bring in jobs, entertainment, something for the downtown area, something for the city and the region as a whole. You know, I believe they shouldn't have gone at it alone. They should have brought in other entities. But you know what? At the end of the day, the voters voted, and that's what's great. The voters said no, and there you have it.
Thank you. And Kevin, would you repeat the question for Felix Cooper?
When the ballpark referendum failed 70% to 30%, what did that say about how in tune City Council was to the people it represents and its stewardship to its constituents?
Well, the people certainly turned down the baseball because of the cost of the city. There was very little city funds involved in comparison to what the overall expenditure was, and I think maybe they got kind of snickered on it. It's not a good word. They had a fast-talking group of people that came in here and said, look what we're going to do for you. And, of course, I like baseball, and I would give anything to have a baseball team down here where I could go to it and see it. But I don't think the city ought to be putting any money into it. We've got a lot of other things that take priority over that. So I think that said it. Next time that we see a big project like that that's going to cost money, we ought to find out before we spend a lot of time and effort on it, will the people pay for it?
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Kevin O'Grady.
There were two parts to the question. First is, were we in tune? At the beginning of the process, and you can go back and listen to the council meetings, I said we were going to do three things. We were going to investigate the industry, we were going to negotiate the best deal we could, and then we were going to bring it to the people of this city. We did exactly what we promised to do. You need a city council that's not afraid. If you want city council to be afraid to look at opportunities, we will never advance. We looked at this opportunity, and then we brought it to you, and you said no. We closed the file and moved on. So we were in tune with the vote. Second thing, Skip, you obviously never read the agreement. Sitting here telling these folks that it didn't add up because of ticket sales. We had a fixed rent. If they sold one ticket, we got $500,000. If they sold 100,000 tickets, we got $500,000. We had a good deal, but you all didn't want it. And that was okay with us. We brought you the best deal we could really negotiate. There wasn't some fake guy out there who's going to pay for a stadium for us. We used to hear that rumor all the time. Well, where did that guy go? He never showed up. We brought you the real deal. You didn't want it. It was okay with us. We moved on. But we showed you City of Wilmington was capable of bringing the best franchise in baseball and the best manager in baseball. We are capable of much more than we usually give ourselves credit for. You need a city council that'll look to the future.
Rachel, forgive me. The sister of my great Mr. O'Grady chose to speak to me directly.
Hold on now.
Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize.
We can't break the
I
format.
Apologize.
I would recommend that if you have a rebuttal to that, you include it in your closing statement.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Earl Sheridan, same question.
Would you repeat the question, please?
Yes. Given the fact that the ballpark referendum failed 70-30, how in tune did that show us that City Council was with the voters as well as being stewards for their constituents?
I think we're good stewards for our constituents. I think one of the things that council is supposed to do is to look at good opportunities for economic development and to help our city be a better place. I think we had an opportunity. It came to us. We looked at that opportunity, the idea of having a ball team downtown. Many people, particularly a lot of young people, come and said that there needs to be some other form of entertainment or whatever it is downtown. And we looked at that. We looked for partners. We didn't just strike out on our own. We looked at the county. We looked at and tried to bring in private entities. That part didn't work out. But we felt that we had a good deal. And as far as being in tune with the people, that's what the election was for. The election was to find out what the people of Wilmington thought about it. And we had that election. And the people spoke. And so that's done. And we're moving on to other things now.
Thank you. If you're just joining us, you're tuned to a special live broadcast of the Wilmington City Council Candidates Forum. We're joined by five of the six candidates running for three open seats on council, as well as two journalists, WWAY's Kevin Wizzardo and WHQR's Katie O'Reilly. We also have a live studio audience. Katie O'Reilly, would you direct your next question to Derek Bickle?
Yes. Moving to more recent history, where do you stand on the recently proposed ban on gang activity in parks?
Obviously, the police chief should get whatever he wants. This is a tool that he came to council wanting. It's something that needs to be looked at. You know, it's very, very touchy ground on civil rights, racial profiling. So as long as the city attorney does his job and looks at it very closely, and I commend the council to put that vote off on it. But you know, obviously giving the police the tools that they need to do what they need to do. The police chief wants it; he should look at it. As long as nobody's civil rights, constitutional rights, racial profiling is involved, that's something that I'm for. You know, I had a friend move here recently from Los Angeles, and they banned gangs everywhere. Obviously, that's something of a bigger city, but it's something, you know, if you look at, hey, we're going to ban them from parks, where are they going to go? What's to keep them from, you know, congregating in the street or congregating outside of anyone's neighborhood? So, you know, where does it stop? Where does it end? I think these are all questions, but obviously, I'm not a lawyer. That's what we have a city attorney for, and I'm sure he's going to do his due diligence and bring that back to council, the questions that they had.
Thank you, sir. Katie, once again, the question, and this goes to Mr. Felix Cooper.
Yes. Where do you stand on the recently proposed ban on gang activity in city parks?
I think it's a good idea. Doesn't need to be a gang capability in a city park, and it just becomes a point that they use to get together to make the gang what it is, and I think that the ban is good.
Thank you, sir. Kevin O'Grady.
Well, you probably heard what I said that night. We'd like to give the chief the tools he needs, but we have to make sure we're following the Constitution. And there's some concern with regard to banning someone from a public area because of association. So we have to be ensuring that we have the correct standards for criminal conspiracy or enterprise crime. And that's what we're trying to look into.
because we will be the leader on this in North Carolina. No city in North Carolina has tried this yet. We'll be the first. We will be challenged on it. We know. ACLU wrote us a letter about it. They were in the audience that night. And I told the young lady from ACLU that I did not agree with her letter, but we were going to do it the right way. We're working on that right now. The city attorney is already working on revising the ordinance. It will probably come back to us shortly. And if it meets constitutional muster, we may pass that. But if it doesn't meet constitutional muster, I certainly am not going to vote for it.
Thank you. Earl Sheridan, same question.
One of the most important tools as far as fighting crime is concerned is a sense of trust between the police and the community. And if you lose that trust, it hampers the job of police in doing their jobs. And so we have to make sure that any ordinance we pass, that it's not going to lead to any kind of profiling or anything of that nature, because that tends to destroy that trust between the community and the police. Yes, people want the gang activity to end, and they would like to have it done with. But at the same time, they also don't want people to be profiled or people to be harassed because they might have on this color or that color and just be hanging out in the park. So we have to make sure that we have an ordinance that, as Kevin says, passes constitutional muster and does not lead us down the road to some sort of profiling. Thank you.
Thank you. Skip Watkins.
Council did the right thing that night in sending it back to the drawing board. In fact, most of the decisions on council are typically unanimous. That night there was one dissenting vote, I believe. But it needs to be made defendable. But it's also a common-sense approach to crime. And I'm not sure the exact name, but I think the state law is called the gang nuisance law, where it also kind of those two could tie together. But the chief assured the community, and I'm sure Dr. Sheridan is correct, that we do need to make sure the trust is, you know, the people in the neighborhoods that are there need to know that their best interests are in the city's best interests are a forefront. But the chief assured us that there would be a verification program where the gang participants would be identified in advance to be able to follow up on that ordinance when it's implemented, and I believe it will be implemented. I look forward to voting for it.
Thank you. Kevin, it's your turn to direct your next question to Mr. Felix Cooper.
Mr. Cooper, how would you assess the relationship between the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County, and what changes would you like to see in that relationship in the next few years?
Well, there's got to be a strong relationship between the city and the county. We both have the same goals, and we both have the same kind of capabilities to fulfill those goals. And I'd like to see a closer working together, individual to individual, from the city and the county. And I'm just sorry that the county is going through what they're going through right now. And maybe the city can learn from that. But I think the city and the county have got to work together and have got to give a little bit and take a little bit.
Thank you. Kevin O'Grady.
We have lots of examples of close cooperation between the city and county that have worked out very well. Olson Park, a beautiful park out there with the Miracle Field and a fully accessible playground. That's a joint project. MP Park with the Althea Gibson Tennis Center, a joint project. You saw the chief and the sheriff working together this week as we're challenged by youth gangs, and they're working together well. Wilmington Fire Department uses automatic aid, extending the scope of their services across borders without regard to the borders. So we do cooperate. However, we have some problems. For one thing, the city residents are constantly called upon to subsidize those who live in the unincorporated area. Patently unfair, and we can't get the county commissioners to understand that. Every time we contribute a dollar and the county contributes a dollar, that means you, the taxpayers of the city of Wilmington, are contributing your dollar and 44 cents of the other side. That's not fair. So as we look at consolidating, I, for one, am going to be looking for eliminating that subsidy. I'm also going to be very concerned about the governing documents over any future consolidation. Look what happened with WAVE this year. We have a consolidated public transportation service. But there was a political change at the county commission level, and they just don't favor public transportation. And they cut the funding. How can you have a consolidated service that takes long-term commitment and not have a long-term financing commitment? So we've got to find ways to ensure that when there is cooperation on long-term, particularly long-term capital expenditures, that there is true commitment and not just commitment till the next election.
Thank you. Earl Sheridan, same question.
I think the relationship has actually improved in recent times. I think there is better communication, and I think we need even more communication. Again, there are various areas in which we have cooperated. Economic development with the incentives for Castle Branch and Encino are some areas that we have cooperated. And so I'd like to see us continue to cooperate. Again, with the idea as far as consolidated services are concerned, I would need to look and see what those services are, and whether or not it's really going to be a benefit to the to our citizens if there's going to be any kind of consolidation. But we certainly do need to increase and continue our communication with the county.
Thank you, Skip Watkins.
For the last few days, I've been out at the board of elections waving at greeting you folks to come to the absentee early voting location. And today I had an opportunity to see a pamphlet that the county produced. And it mentioned in there, as of 2010, Wilmington was the second smallest county in the state and the second most dense population per square mile. I think the necessity of being the mother of invention that you're going to see more and more. I've always been a big advocate of consolidation of services. I've met with both city and county fire officials, and there's probably not going to be a lot of early savings, but they do believe, and of course they're the experts, so we have to hope to look to them but verify their numbers, that there's going to be some long-term savings in that concerted effort. I hope that there are some other areas that there's a large number of county employees that are coming to retirement in the next few years. I'm sure the city may have something similar. And so I look forward to a compassionate consolidation, because the last thing I think any of us want up here is to see somebody lose a job. But I think the county will be able to put this recent unfortunate history behind them. And I do believe that you're going to see a strengthening of that relationship. I think it already exists in the examples already given tonight. But the biggest thing is the people, you've got to ask for it. You've got to ask for it. You've got to demand it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Derek Bickle.
As far as the city and the county, I don't know. I can't remember the question exactly, but we're talking about consolidating services.
We can repeat the question if you
that's
like.
Fine. That's fine. But yeah, Kevin was talking earlier about we do have some overlapping. You know, the sheriff and the police chief were working together hand in hand today, Wave Transit. But you know, I think we need to look at other areas, and one area in particular has been mentioned before is fire. You know, 83% of the sales tax from New Hanover County comes from the city of Wilmington, but the city of Wilmington only gets 21% of that back. So that's a raw deal. You know, anytime that we can get and consolidate services with the county and get some of that money back, you know, I don't want my taxes raised, and I'm sure you all don't want to either. One area of this would be fire. You know, as long as they're already doing it now, they're overlapping those areas. As long as we can continue to do that and no one loses their jobs and we can combine those budgets and get money back for the taxpayers, that's something I'm all for. Thanks.
Thank you. Katie O'Reilly, would you direct your next question to Kevin O'Grady?
Yes. Mr. O'Grady, you just mentioned WAVE. Do you have any ideas for expanding and improving public transportation in Wilmington?
Well, I think it's going to have to be driven by demand. Right now, there's two purposes for public transportation. One is for those who use it as a necessity. And essentially, the WAVE system is a system of necessity right now. We're serving low-income people and students who have no alternative transportation. The only way they can get to work and to school and to the hospital is by riding WAVE. The other kind of passenger is the choice passenger, the one who will ride it because rather than dealing with traffic, they want to sit on the bus and read the paper as they get to work in the morning. We're not there yet. As a city, we're just not there yet. But we will be. There'll be a time when, as we grow and traffic increases, where public transportation is going to be more important. WAVE is the core. It's the beginning of a system that can grow into a modern urban system. We have to change our thinking about it, though. We have to stop thinking that outside of the city limits, somehow it's rural and doesn't need public transportation. I'm sorry, take a ride up Market Street outside of the city and tell me that's not an urban area. Tell me that's not just as much of a city as everything within the city limits. And then take the same trip down Carolina Beach Road and you'll come to the same conclusion. It is as much of a city as the city of Wilmington. They need public transportation. They just haven't realized it yet and bought into it. I think that as that realization comes, and we're seeing it in Carolina Beach, we've now extended service to Carolina Beach, and when it was threatened, we were at WAVE, were avalanched by complaints by the people who live in Carolina Beach, who use that to get to work. Slowly, the attitude will change, and I believe the system will grow. It will take more local money because it's a it's an inverted pyramid of grants from the state and federal government, but it depends on local contribution.
Thank you. And before we go to Earl Sheridan, we are going to wrap up this broadcast for WWAY. We will continue the answers to this question in part two of Wilmington's live City Council candidate forum. I'd like to thank the folks at WWAY for collaborating with us on this live broadcast, this important political event. Thanks also to the volunteers and the staff members at WHQR. Thanks to guest panelist Kevin Wizzardo of WWAY, TV3. All the folks at AY, especially Scott Pickey, who helped produce and broadcast this event. And our heartfelt thanks to our live audience. If you would like to email a question to have answered in the second portion of the forum, send that to newsdirector@whqr.org. We will continue this broadcast at 8:04 on WHQR 91.3 FM. Most importantly, remember to vote. Early voting is already underway in New Hanover County, and Election Day is November 5th. Thank you so much, and good night. And we now have time for a quick break. We will reconvene a little bit before 8:04. The bathroom is down the hall.